What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There are indications that this might be one of the most unusual legislative sessions in many decades. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, lawmakers are meeting remotely and virtually as they tackle some of Vermont's biggest issues, including proposals to help the state recover from this virus. In her opening remarks to lawmakers last month, newly elected House Speaker Jill Krowinski said the 2021 session would be largely defined by how well the legislature responds to the many pandemic challenges facing the state.
We gather here for a session like no other. The echoes of the State House are quiet. The hallways of the Capitol are still. Yet our work begins now at the fall of the gavel. The 2021 session will be historic and will be remembered as the coronavirus recovery session.
What are some of the most important priorities to help Vermont not only weather this pandemic, but also lay the groundwork for a stronger economic future? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, the legislature's two new Democratic leaders, House Speaker Jill Krowinski, who is a representative from Burlington, and Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballant, who represents Windham County. I'd like to welcome both of you to the program today. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to start off with sort of a look and get your philosophy on the role of government before we discuss some of the specific budget proposals. Senator Ballant, in your acceptance speech after being elected the president pro tem of the Senate, and you're the first woman to be holding that position, you told a story about a history professor at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, Gerald McFarlane, who had a sign on his office door saying, "Every day is a good day." Here's what you said.
But I've come to understand this motto as something much more expansive than just having an optimistic view of things. It's not just about being positive. It's about seeing possibility. It's about seeing promise. And that is what I wish for all of us in this biennium, even though we will be serving under the shadow of this pandemic.
Senator Ballant, could you explain this approach a little more and how it could be a factor in the operations of the Vermont Senate this year?
Sure, be happy to. So I was thinking about this in the context of a researcher named Hans Rosling, who believes in thinking about possibility and considers him, he's passed away now, but he considered himself what he called a possibilist. So not someone who only saw the world through rose-colored glasses, but someone who was always looking for progress that had been made and progress that can still be made. So in thinking about the work that we have ahead of us in the legislature, I know that something that I've heard really strongly from senators and from constituents is that although this is a really dark time and we face so many challenges, we want to be looking ahead to how can we build systems that will work better going forward. And I know that in many ways, the governor and the speaker and I are in alignment that we want to make sure that we learn our lessons from this emergency around our childcare system, our broadband system, how we can shore up our educational system going forward. And this emergency has revealed so many cracks in the system. I guess I should edit that and say, we knew the cracks were there. We didn't know how much, just to look at one issue such as broadband. Certainly, we all knew it impacts commerce and social connection. But this emergency has shown us how deeply it affects educational access and also issues related to telehealth. And so we want to make sure that the lessons learned from this pandemic will then be transformed into building these stronger systems going forward. And as you said, it could be that we need to invest one-time money, as the governor has recommended, and I'm sure we will as well. But it may be that in a month's time, we're going to get another package from the federal government that's going to allow us to do significant investments in these areas. And one of the things that I've said to my colleagues is that the conditions are changing on the ground almost every day, and we have to be willing to integrate new information.
And Speaker Krawinski, in a general sense, I'm wondering, how do you view the role of government, particularly in responding to a pandemic? Does this current situation create some additional opportunities and responsibilities for state government?
Thank you, Bob. Well, first, I just think it's really important to start off by saying thank you to all of the Vermonters who've been stepping up to help through this pandemic. It has been almost a year, believe it or not. And every day we have just incredible people out there fighting the fight to help get us through this, from healthcare providers, mental health providers, farmers, teachers, grocery store workers, the list goes on. And I just want to recognize that, because I know it's been really hard. And I've been hearing from my constituents and community members that, this is just a really hard time for people. So I just want to start by acknowledging that, and that our role as legislators and creating a plan to get us through this recovery that leaves no Vermonter behind is very critical right now. And, you know, as I talk with Vermonters across the state, virtually, of course, you know, I'm hearing the same things that we were working on as issues before the pandemic, but have been made worse by the pandemic. So access to broadband, access to high quality, affordable childcare, access to affordable housing. These stresses on families right now are real. And so I see our role is really doing our good work to be strategic and use our limited resources to focus on these issues. And while we work on childcare and broadband and housing, there are other fundamental challenges that we were working on before the pandemic that we also need to continue to work on. Dealing with systemic racism and working on social equity and justice issues, continuing our work on climate change, and also working on our unfunded pension liability. So we have our work cut out for us, but I can assure you that our members are all in and working together to find solutions and to help get us through this pandemic and making sure we leave no Vermonter behind.
Bob, well, Governor, this is Senator Ballant. I wonder if I could just also add something else that I don't want to be lost in the conversation, because you did allude, a reference to it earlier, which is we're approaching this session, yes, in the midst of a pandemic. We're also in the midst of a reckoning around what does it mean when partisan vitriol gets so intense that it's shaking the foundations of democracy. And so we started our session watching the insurrection on the Capitol. So part of the work that we also have to do is instilling in Vermonters a trust in government again. They are anxious. They are fearful. We are hearing it in the texts, the emails, the instant messages, the Facebook posts we hear from people, that fundamentally we have got to show Vermonters that their government is still functioning and working together. And it's palpable in the emails that we're getting from people right now. And I just wanted to draw attention to that.
Well, let's follow up on that. I mean, are you saying that you're getting a fair amount of communication from folks who, because of what's happened in this country in the last, well, we could say the last month, we could say the last number of years, that they no longer trust government to help them in important situations?
That's certainly one thread that we're hearing. We're also hearing from people who absolutely still believe in, for example, the QAnon conspiracy. We hear that. People who fundamentally believe that this election was fraudulent. We are still hearing those voices, and it colors the work that we do when we realize We are trying to be as open and transparent as possible in the work that we do. And we are doing it in the midst of a crisis in this nation about trust of government. And I think sometimes we do our work here in the legislature somewhat in isolation. You all don't get to see our inboxes every day. You don't get to hear all the phone calls we receive. And so you may not be aware that Vermont is not untouched by this. We are still very much feeling the effects of the last 4 years of this presidency and the events of what happened at the beginning of January. Do you agree, Jill?
I absolutely would agree with that. You know, I think what I hear is that people are just concerned and just feel that our foundation has been, you know, shook. what I'm proud of is the way that we've pulled together as a body in the House and as the Senate to try to stand up to say that, you know, we fully condemn what happened in Washington, and we are working really hard together here across party lines to get things done to help Vermonters through this crisis.
Senator Ballot, there may be some people listening who are thinking, well, you know, that stuff happened down in Washington. That doesn't happen in Vermont. Are you saying, hey, hold on here. It certainly is present in Vermont, and it's something that we have to deal with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are not an exception, Bob. We have these elements in Vermont. Our legislators hear from these Vermonters who for whom it is not happening down in D.C., that they believe that we as Democrats are somehow complicit in a fraudulent election. So when I know my own constituents are still beholden to this horrible rhetoric, it does color the work that we do. How do we convey to people that we are absolutely working hard to take care of Vermonters, you know, in the midst of this pandemic? And I've got people who contact me all the time saying, masks don't work. Why is the governor, you know, asking us to wear masks? They don't work. They're dangerous. And so it has crept into the work that we do on a daily basis. And I hear it from both sides of the aisle. I hear it from my colleagues who are Republicans who are also feeling attacked for not standing with this, with the former president. And I think that's just continue to be a problem that we have to address head on and not pretend that it's not here.
So, Senator, how do you deal with it? What steps do you feel the legislature can take to help restore trust with the people?
So one thing that I've been trying to show and model to my senators is that we need to, as soon as we have information about something, anything that we think is relevant to constituents, we need to make sure that we turn it around in real time. For example, and we heard it at the top of the hour here, we were talking about the emergency at the Vermont Department of Labor with the security breach that happened. From the very first moments that we heard about it, I know the speaker and I were really clear with our members. We have got to get out as much information that we can in real time and conveying to the department how important it was to do that as well. And so one is communication. Now, as you well know, Bob, because you've covered the State House forever, we don't have a lot of staff. So a lot of this falls to senators and House members themselves to try to post something on social media, get something out to their email list. Another aspect is working really hard to make sure that all of the work that we do in the legislature is online and is accessible. Now, I live in Windham County, and those of us in Windham and Bennington County, in some ways, the legislature right now is more accessible than it's ever been because you can watch every single committee hearing online. And we are still trying to figure out how to do this well. We were one of the only legislatures that went fully remote. We did it pretty nimbly. I have to give a big shout out to our IT department in that regard. But we are still trying to figure out how to do this. And so I just want to give you one quick example of something that the speaker and I have been working on for the last week, which is there are, for example, chat functions on Zoom and there are comment sections on YouTube. And we have had an ongoing conversation within the legislature about to what extent do those avenues for feedback, to what extent are they productive, or are they actually just another platform for people to say hateful things, to say things that are inaccurate. So we're trying to balance the transparency with making sure that it is a safe place for people to give testimony. And, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, we have not got it all figured out, but we are committed to shoring up our democratic institutions. And I know that I speak for both of us when we say this is incredibly important to us.
One of the things I'll just follow up on with what Becca was just saying around communications, which I think is really important that we've been focused on and getting information out quickly to members and the public about new situations that are happening that we're monitoring. But it's also about increased access to participation. So yes, we have our committee hearings online that you can watch in real time or watch after. Same with our floor sessions. But also one small thing, but I think it is really important, is building on the work that we did during last year, which is increasing methods for participation for the public. So we can't go on the road right now because of the pandemic, but we can increase access to participation through more public hearings, holding them at different times, holding them on different days to make sure that all Vermonters who want to have an opportunity to participate can, and just finding new ways to do that. And I think that is one thing that Beck and I have been talking about as we kind of find ways to restore trust, increase transparency and participation in government.
We're going to look at the governor's budget proposal. This year, he proposed a nearly $2 billion general fund budget for next year. He says this represents between a 2 or 3% increase in general state spending. Now, at the same time, he says the state has around $210 million in federal stimulus money that should be used for one-time investments in the future. And he's quite insistent that this federal money not be used to finance any ongoing programs in state government. Here's how he put it in his budget address.
If we're cautious, we can solve problems and fund projects that have been stalled for years. However, if we don't learn from past mistakes and choose to use one-time money to create ongoing obligations that we can't afford in the future, we'll be forced to increase the burden on working Vermonters, slowing her recovery and missing an incredible opportunity.
Let me ask you both, and we can start with House Speaker Jill Krowinski. Do you accept this as the parameters of the budget address and the budget debate, that there's this $210 million in federal money and it should only be used for one-time investments?
Well, Bob, I'll just start off by saying that the fact that we're talking about over $200 million in new money that we were not anticipating really creates a different space for us to work when creating our budget priorities and what works best for Vermonters. You know, it was only a couple months ago we were anticipating hundreds of millions of in deficit because of the pandemic. And so to be starting from this place where we're talking about long-term strategic investments that help us through this pandemic and the long-term is just an incredible place to be. And I just want, we need to acknowledge that this was not potentially where we could be starting from. I think that the governor laid out some really some similar themes in what we have been talking about in terms of how we set Vermont up for recovery that leaves no one behind. So I was glad to hear him talk about broadband, housing, and weatherization. Those are great things to invest in. I hear his call about one-time money, and I think that we not only need to think about how we are strategic with those funds, but understand that we may be getting more money from the federal government in stimulus funds. And so his budget was really a snapshot in a point of time. And as we listen to and we hear more from testimonies, we vet these proposals, as we look under the hood and kick the tires, we're going to see where we are now at this point in addressing Vermont's greatest needs.
And Senator Ballant, as the speaker said, it's likely that Vermont's going to get some more money in stimulus money in the coming weeks or months. Should all this money be considered one-time money and not be used for ongoing programs in state government?
So what's interesting is before we heard the governor's proposal around the budget and how he wanted to spend this one-time money, I actually had conversation with two of the most important women in my chamber, Senator Kitchell and Senator Cummings, who had the money committees. And we actually were, the three of us were all in alignment in many ways, which is that this is a snapshot, a point in time. We're going to have to integrate new information. But also this money is, as the speaker said, it's a bit of an unexpected windfall. And when you have an unexpected windfall of this kind, in your own family, right? You win a scratch ticket or you win the lottery at the bazaar. It doesn't change the underlying structural problem, right? So we knew that going in. And so in that way, for him to say he wants to invest it in, not on ongoing expenses, that makes a lot of sense to us. We don't have a lot of differences in opinion on that. We really don't. What I want to encourage the governor and his team to do is just be open to the fact that we're going to know more in a few weeks from the Biden administration about what other funds are coming to Vermont. And we have important work to do that's going to require significant investment going forward. As Jill said, housing, it's been a priority for us. It continues to be a priority for us. We certainly want to look at the, broadband build out takes an incredible amount of money to invest in it. So those are questions we have. But back to the budget question, I know that in speaking with my senators, we have issues in some particular parts of the budget in terms of his inability to look at any kind of increased spending. One of those line items is around mental health investments. We are in the midst of a crisis that is of physical nature, but also emotional and psychological nature. And I want us to all be open to thinking carefully about the kinds of trauma that our children are going through right now and families. And should we be making more investments into our mental health system? Should we be dedicating more money to our designated agencies, those frontline workers who are going to be doing that work? So, the thing about politics and a line in the sand is that you can draw the line, but you have to be willing to integrate new information. You really do. And I'm hoping the governor's team is well aware of that and is willing to take another look if there's other money that is going to be coming our way.
Becca just mentioned some of the other topics and policies that we're looking at in the context of the budget, like mental health, for example. It's really important to us that we're hearing from Vermonters and what their priorities are for the budget. So I'm just going to take this opportunity to plug our public hearings for the budget, which are taking place Monday, February 8th at 1 p.m. and at 6 p.m. Anyone listening, if you have feelings about what we should be talking about in this budget and you have thoughts and strategies on how we can be doing that, please sign up to testify Monday, either at 1 p.m. or at 6 p.m.
You can go to the homepage of the legislature, and it's listed right there on the right under announcements, and you can find the links to how you can get yourself signed up to testify.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Pamela, who's calling from Charlotte. Hi, Pamela. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I had the question that I keep hearing on national discussions that the states have not received in the past stimulus money, and now for the latest one they're debating down in Washington, the Dems want
more money for the states, and the Republicans seem like they don't. So what is this one-time money that we actually got? Did all states get one-time money that, you know, Phil's talking about spending the $210 million, again, the stimulus money from, I guess, last year, but did other states not get money? Because they're talking about this in a way that seems like the Democrats and the Republicans have two different thoughts on that.
Okay, Pamela, thanks for your question. I think it's fair to say that most states got this money, and Governor Scott was, if he had any criticism of the original stimulus package, is that it didn't give the state enough discretion on how that money was going to be spent. But there was a pool of money where there was a great deal of discretion. Senator Ballant, do I have that right?
Yeah, so there's a couple things at play here. And Pamela, it's not your fault that you're confused, because there are so many moving parts here. So the first thing that I want to say is there was a package that was passed last spring that Vermont received $1.25 billion in what we're calling CRF funding, or CRF funds, the coronavirus relief funds. We were able to turn that almost all around in a very short amount of time by the end of December. And that went into investments in housing and relief for people who couldn't pay their rent and all kinds of programs. And that was the original coronavirus relief funds that we received. Then there was another package that was passed in December. The package in December was smaller, and it also had a lot more restrictions on how we could spend the money. And then, in addition to that, Vermont did better on our sales tax because many people were home buying a lot of things online, frankly, and ordering food in. And there was an uptick in people buying automobiles. And so you had money from revenue from sales tax that we did not anticipate. We did not understand that if you're not going out to dinner, you're going to have disposable income to spend it in other ways. So a lot of the one-time money that we're talking about is actually sales revenue that we didn't know we would have. Then you're hearing about another package of stimulus funds that we hope will come in a few weeks or months from the Biden administration, which we are hoping will include something that will give direct relief to state and local governments, because that was not the case in the package that came in December. So I hope that clarifies. Jill, I bet you've got more to say about this. So,
I think you did a really great job explaining the situation that we're in and all of the different moving parts. And I'll just say that we are working really hard to get the money out the door that can get out the door to projects that are shovel ready, that we can get going, that we don't need to wait for our budget. So one other piece to this puzzle is that we typically pass a budget adjustment every year to true up our priorities and any changes with our expenditures. And then we move to the budget, which we just heard the governor lay out his budget proposal, and we are working on that. In addition, we are working on the House to get to the Senate as soon as possible. A working family, small business, COVID relief bill that can help get some of this money out the door as soon as possible, knowing that spring is coming and that there are some projects ready to go. So I just, we want Vermonters to know that we are doing everything in our power to get money out the door as soon as possible to help us get through this pandemic.
And if I could just add one thing, I think the tension here, I just want to make an implicit dynamic that's happening within the legislature that I want to make explicit, which is that we are in this tenuous place of wanting to turn money around quickly, get it out the door to the people, the small business in need. And we also have the really important job as legislators to do oversight and make sure that money is spent in the best way that it can. And so I was actually at a forum last night in which the representative I was on the panel with said, look, you know, we're always balancing investments to individual Vermonters versus investments to organizations and businesses and trying to find the right balance to keep our towns and communities and families healthy. And it's a very difficult job to get it right. But I'm so glad that we have so many eyes within the legislature working at these issues, so many committees who are looking at this proposed package of coronavirus relief and making sure we try to get the mix right.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Mary Alice, who's calling from Montpelier. Hi, Mary Alice. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi there. I want to congratulate Becca and Jill for their high positions. It certainly hasn't been like that all this time. I remember running for state senate back in 1999, and that was the year that Phil Scott became a Washington County senator. But I'm calling about health care as something that the governor never even mentioned. I know you have mentioned mental health care, but I really feel we need to get rid of one care, and we need to think of some of the money that if we could get everybody into the same pot, if health care was definitely a right, not a privilege, and union members, school teachers and state employees particularly do not have special plans but could be in the same plan as everybody else, that could be a way of helping get money for the pension fund that the treasurer is so concerned about and use some progressive taxes as well. So I was hoping you might address this issue. As a trauma survivor myself and with a lot of mental health problems that have kept me from doing things over the years and living in subsidized housing. I'm 84 years old, and I'm still interested in politics. So I hope you will address this.
Okay, Mary Alice, thank you very much for your phone call. Speaker Krawinski, what's the likelihood that this legislature, with everything that is going on, is going to be able to tackle the issue of accessibility and universal access to health care during this session?
Well, first, thank you, Mary Alice, for your call. We really appreciate hearing your voice and glad that you once tried to run for office. That's really important, cheering on all of the women out there who want to run for office or are thinking about running for office. When you think about healthcare and what we've been doing as a state for the past 4 years, we have been playing defense because of the Trump administration. And so bill after bill out of our House Healthcare Committee has largely been focused on ensuring that people have access to the healthcare they have now. So it is incredibly refreshing and exciting to have a new administration in DC who's going to be a partner with us on healthcare and not be at constant odds at one another fighting over healthcare benefits. I agree. You know, when we start talking about mental health care, we have an incredible work to do, an incredible job to do to ensure that our providers have what they need to be successful and to help Vermonters through this. Our House Health Committee right now, Healthcare Committee, is working on a bill expanding access to telemedicine. During this pandemic, it's raised serious issues, again, about, you know, we can't go to the doctor's office the way we could. There's limited access to healthcare providers. So using technology to help expand access is one part of this package and how we address healthcare during this pandemic. And, you know, again, we're just getting started. And I think what's refreshing is that we'll be able to come to the table and hear all these ideas, new ideas with an administration that's supportive of us in DC to find out what can we do to help Vermonters have access to affordable and accessible healthcare.
Senator Ballot, the governor says he wants to have expanding the lottery as a way to provide more money for child care. I think he wants to put Keno in bars and restaurants all around the state. Will you be supporting that?
You know, it's an interesting question, Bob, which is, you know, is that really a stream of money that will help us pay our ongoing expenses around childcare? We have, as we talked about earlier, a real desire to be taking care of Vermonters and mental health struggles. And I don't know if putting gambling machines in bars is the way to sustainably fund childcare initiatives going forward. I will say, this is a place where I think the Senate and the House sometimes disagrees. We do support expanding sports betting in Vermont, and we want to make sure that we have the ability to capture those funds. We know about, according to some reports, 100,000 Vermonters are right now actively engaged in sports betting, and we are not capturing that revenue. So that is one area in which we do feel like there is overlap with the administration. Of course, every initiative that comes before the Senate is going to get a hearing in committee. I know his proposal for keno machines in bars will also get a hearing. My quick read from talking to senators, there's not a lot of love for this idea right now, but you know, we will take testimony on it like we always do.
I'll just add that I'm, you know, very happy to hear the governor be talking about childcare. This is a top priority for us in the House, and I know as well in the Senate. And I do have serious concerns about expanding gambling as a funding source, but I think we all share the common goal of finding a way to expand affordability and access for childcare in this state. You know, we just saw this recent report that showed that 73% of those collecting unemployment in Vermont are women. Women are losing jobs, and it's because they are being challenged about finding access to affordable childcare and having to choose between taking care of their kids and their jobs. And that's not our values. That's not what we value here. So we need just to really focus our energy on how can we create and find a sustainable way to expand access to childcare in our state. And so we are looking forward to working with the Senate and the governor on childcare.
And, you know, Jill brought up something really important. And since we have, you know, a platform now, I want to amplify what she just said. We had a researcher at our joint fiscal office dive into the details about unemployment claims. And as the speaker said, over 70% were women. And the other piece that I want people to know is that's an outlier for the nation. It's also an outlier for New England. And we are trying to figure out what's going on here. Why are we such an outlier for the number of women that needed to leave the workforce during this pandemic? And we're still trying to gather that data and make sense of it. But as Jill said, childcare, important part of this conversation. And we are pleased to hear that the governor is interested and has been elevating this issue during the pandemic. So there is common ground there for us to try to build a stronger childcare program and system throughout the state for all levels of income.
Senator Ballant, we've gotten a couple of emails about the state's pension shortfall and what might have to be done in order to make sure that those funds have the money that they need. What we've seen over the years is maybe a combination of factors of an older demographic in Vermont. Certainly the population has been aging. At the same time, during the 1990s, there were a number of years that the legislature did not make the contributions to the pension fund that were necessary to keep the fund in good financial shape. And now the state treasurer is talking about a proposal that will change perhaps the cost of living increases, not for people who are currently retired, but for people who are now working, state employees, state teachers, and they think that that's a very unfair approach. How do you think this should be handled?
I think it should be handled very carefully and methodically. And as you said, Bob, there were years in which the recommended minimum was not paid in, but I do want to highlight that in the last several legislative sessions, we've actually pre-funded, we've paid in more than was recommended. And it's something that I know both the money committees in both chambers were keen to advocate for. And this issue has been a long time coming. It has been building through, I think, four different gubernatorial administrations. It's been building through, you know, countless numbers of legislative sessions. And so this is a problem that we have inherited, and it is a problem that we need to deal with. And I know the speaker and I have been really clear in speaking with our legislative colleagues that this is not a time when we can continue to wring our hands and say what can be done. We have to come to the table with the administration, with the executive branch, and say it is time for us to figure out how to make this solvent long term. And I'll be transparent. I actually hold a small teacher's pension. I was a public school teacher here in Vermont. I am keenly aware, going back to the issue of gender, that the majority of people pulling a pension within the teachers program is they're female teachers. And so this is disproportionately going to be affecting women Vermonters. And so we have pre-funded. I believe we need to continue to do that. I know that there's a difference of opinion between the legislature right now and the governor's office in terms of defined benefits versus defined contributions. But we're at the beginning stages of a very complicated process of figuring out how to do right by our retirees and how to make sure the system is solvent long-term. So this is not going to be pleasant work for anyone, but we are going in with a very sober and clear attitude that it has to be dealt with.
Yeah, and I'll just add that, you know, in addition to what Becca said, that we want to ensure that our state employees and teachers who have worked so hard to have peace of mind when they retire. We know that there's no simple, easy solution to this. Otherwise, we would have found it already. So what we're doing is we're bringing stakeholders around the table. We're meeting with the unions. We're meeting with the state treasurer who started this conversation for us. This is carrying over the conversation that we started last session about finding a short-term and long-term fix for this. We're pacing ourselves. We're gathering information. We're bringing people to the table. And I really hope, and I want to extend an invitation to Governor Scott to join us in this effort, because we all need to be in this together so that we can find a solution that works for everyone.
Well, Speaker Kerwinski, is it inevitable as you seek that solution that some kind of reduction in benefits is going to be necessary?
Well, this is what I've been telling all of the stakeholders and members around the table is I want to pull all the ideas out there, right? We have not made any decisions, to be clear. We want to pull all these ideas together in a box and dump them on the table and sort through and vet these concepts, making sure that we're being transparent and clear with one another, that there's open lines of communications, and that we provide ample opportunity for feedback and reactions and ideas on how we solve this problem. So again, we're pacing ourselves. We're getting more information. We have not made any decisions yet. And I look forward to working with our House Government Operations team will be taking the lead on this. We'll be working closely with the Senate, with all of the unions involved, the state treasurer. And again, I hope that the governor will join us as well.
I wanted to ask you both quickly about a process involving the executive branch and the legislative branch of government. And it has to do with gubernatorial executive orders. Now, the governor at the beginning of this session did a executive order regarding Act 250 and setting up three state district people who or commission members who would go around the state and meet with local officials. He also did a executive order consolidating law enforcement agencies throughout the state. And the Senate this afternoon is going to take up the Act 250 executive order, and there are indications that the Senate will say, no, this is not a good idea. The House Government Operations Committee has said they don't like the idea of the consolidation of law enforcement. Now, I'm just wondering from the two of your point of view, is having just one chamber act on these executive orders enough for the rejection to be legitimate and legal? Or is the governor right in saying, no, no, both chambers have to act on this? Senator Ballant, what's your view on that?
I am so glad you asked that, Bob, because we are unequivocal in our view, and we have gotten a lot of legal advice. And it is clear to us that one chamber only, needs to reject an executive order. And the argument that the governor's legal counsel is making is quite singular, and I would say it is a little bit eyebrow raising. And we have met with our chair's committee of jurisdictions. We are clear that it is one chamber. The other thing that I want people to know who are listening about how executive orders work, when the executive order comes to a chamber and we, you know, commit it to a committee of jurisdiction, it is an up or down vote. We don't get to make any changes to the executive order. This isn't a situation where we could say, this is this part we like, this part we don't like, we're going to make edits and then pass the executive order. That is not within our authority to do that. We either accept or reject. And I'm just going to give one little bit of detail here. In the Act 250 executive order that was signed by the governor, there is no process for appeal. And that alone, regardless of all the other moving parts, that alone is concerning to us. It takes away a tremendous amount of local control when there is no appeals process. So we have to say up or down, does it work? No, it's not working for us. So we will take it up in committee as a bill. That is what I want people to know.
Yep. And that's right. On the House side, we are looking at the reorganization of public safety services. And again, the same as what the pro tem just said, it's an up or down vote. And when we heard and took lots of testimony on the executive order, it was clear that there were some things that people thought were good ideas and some flags around some others. And so we have said to the governor, please, let's work on this together. Come to us with the bill and let's go through the legislative process to make sure that we can find a compromise that really addresses the problem that he's trying to solve there. So we will be taking up our executive order, the resolution on Friday. As well.
Well, this has been an informative discussion of many of the Democratic priorities at the State House. Many thanks to our guests today, Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballot and also House Speaker Jill Krawinski. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.